Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Mutch filling in today for Dave Pezzo on this sunny but cold morning.
It's beautiful so far, though.
It is. Welcome back.
Thanks.
It's been a while.
I know. It has been. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah. Yes, we're glad to have you. So we're both certified financial planners with Pezzo Financial and worked with Dave for a few years now. I'm pushing 30 and Eric has been there of almost seven?
Five. But I'll take the seven. That's okay.
I always round up.
I like it.
So it's been we got a lot of things we want to cover today. Partly fear of missing out. That's an interesting topic. Am I ready to retire? As well as what is the market doing overall? And questions and answers for financial advisors. We did that once last year, and we felt that it came across really well, and people don't really know what to ask when they're interviewing and how to even start. But we also want your phone calls, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. If you prefer email, it's jstone@petsofinancial.net. So again, another rough week in the market. Had a couple up days, but mostly we were down around a little over 1.5% on each of the indices. So that's bringing us down pretty good for the year. But does that really change anything? We were talking a bit about setting goals. We set goals for targets like buying a car, buying a new house, retirement, education. We set all these goals. And when you go to see a financial advisor or choose to do it on your own, that's the first step. You write down what you're trying to accomplish, because if you don't, what's the purpose of even getting started if you don't have an end point? Of course, we all should get started, but we always want to put it towards what? So we thought about that and we said, what other things should you write down when you first start investing? I feel you should write down why. Why today? What was the point? What was the purpose of getting started today? Write that down. What's the market doing? Are you investing now because it's done very, very well the last 3 years and now is the time to get started? Be real. Write it down and say, this is why I'm starting. So that when we have times like we do today, when we've corrected and we're starting to have a little more volatility than we've had in the past, looking at the last 5 to 7 years that Eric has been in the business, she's really never experienced a down year. Very small. One was 6%, another was 1%. So very, very small downs during her investing career. So that becomes more of a comfort for her, just like it would become a comfort for anyone else that's investing. So if you write down, I am investing today because, you don't have to share it with your advisor. You don't even have to share it with anyone. Just put it aside so that when things get rocky and you say, I want to stop doing what I decided to do 6 months ago, a year ago, whatever that time period may be, go back to that note. And what did you say you would do when this happened? Because when the lights are on, it's sunny and shiny and beautiful outside, it's real easy to decide to keep going. When there's darkness and you start to get nervous, then you may be tempted to change that plan that you wrote down. This time it may be different. This time we may lose. All those words that are the most dangerous things you can ever say to yourself when investing may become very, very, very loud at that time. Go back, pull that out. Say, what did you say you were going to do when this happened? What did you say you were going to do if the market was down 5%, 10%, even 20%? What would you do? And I'll bet it's different than what you're feeling at this moment. So don't let that change it, because really the best thing for you to do is just consistently keep investing. Know that you're working towards a goal and don't let anything push you off of that goal. It's scary to think about. I know we're human. We all feel it. We don't like to watch the market continue to go down, even though it's really not down that much considering we've been up substantially the last 3 years, even the last 5 to 7, as you've seen. So why is it now this going to change everything we've looked for? The market's down on average every year 14%, but it's up 76% of the time. So when it's down those 14%, go back to that note you wrote when things were good and reset yourself and say, oh yeah, I remember why I'm doing this. This is why I'm doing this. Because it will lead you to always react differently. One way or the other, if the market's too high, you should also pull out that note so that you don't go in and buy the hot stock of the day and say, you know what, I really want to own Peloton, Coinbase, some of these stocks that were really, really high flying when they first came out. Because it goes both ways. I don't want you to get too aggressive or too conservative. So what did you decide and why? Write it down. Go to it when you want to change and become more aggressive. Go to it when you want to change and become more conservative, and stick with your core plan. Not what the current environment is giving you. We actually ran a couple things because we thought it was interesting, and we looked at some of these stocks. We looked at Coinbase, which was an interesting one. Everyone's talking about Bitcoin right now. And Rivian, which was an electric car company. Both of those IPO'd or did their initial public offering. Most people that are listening to this probably know what that means, but they issue a certain number of stock when they first go public on the market in hope to get a good price. And they issue so many, a big bank helps them. These two were not done through those SPAC or the special purpose acquisition company. They weren't done that way, where they're actually done through an IPO. Both of them opened above what their price was on the day they went public. But Coinbase is down 41.5% since that time, and Rivian is down 38%. So those are things that could have triggered you to get more aggressive, because everyone was talking about it. It was all the rage. You don't want to get more aggressive. You don't want to get more conservative. You want to stick with your core. So it's interesting. We'd spent a lot of time thinking about how to keep that psychology, and that's what this is all about. Dalbar studies, all these different things that they do to see how the average investor reacts to different things. I looked at the most recent Dalbar study, which was 20 years from through the end of 2020. The average investor is down about 2% per year, less than the S&P. Doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a $100,000 difference. That's a big deal. So think about that when you make your goals and your core, and go to those every single time you start to get nervous or worried about what the market's doing currently. And check with your advisors too, right? If you're working with a financial advisor, who are they at their core? Are they going to get tricked into selling at the high points, or getting you to buy that hot stock or sell when things are, you know, they're nervous or whatever? Make sure they have their core too. So get to know their philosophy and make sure that it matches with yours. Because if it doesn't, they may not be the right people for you. So it's interesting. Be sure you know who you're working with, why you're doing what you're doing, and continue to do that consistently. All right. We're going to jump to the phones right now because we always love to talk to Jim. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hello, Jennifer and Erica. How's it going?
We're great.
Good, good, good. So is Dave playing coward this week?
No, actually. I believe it's their first year or second year?
Second year.
Second year anniversary. So they took a little trip to get away together.
Yes, there would be that excuse. I think Dave is actually over in Russia talking to Putin.
Oh, no, I don't think so. But then again, he may be a great negotiator there.
Putin's just going to, things are going so great. Surely Putin's got some investments, you know, other than in Russia. So, you know, anyway, my only thing was, you know, it's kind of interesting. The last few days of 2021, I'm sitting there, you know, thinking about the market. Hang in there. Just a few more days, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it did pretty well, you know. And supposedly, according to Dave, the market was up like 28% or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for one thing, people get spoiled, you know. And they used to. There was a division between, in capitalism, labor and capital, right? Well, when you invest, you don't do a damn thing, as Dave would point out. You know, you put money there, and then it goes up, and then sometimes it goes up ridiculously high. And, you know, I don't know. You get it spoiled, you got to realize you're not doing a damn thing about it. But so anyway, 2021 ended. And the statements look pretty good. Now, I gave Dave, I think it was last week, this analogy. It's kind of like with the BSU football team, right? The big Peterson, Fiesta Bowl of 2007,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
When they beat Oklahoma. Okay, I'm sure that even today, people will whip out the old DVD, blow off the dust, and watch the good old days and reflect. Well, that's what they need to do with their financial statements, you know. Just don't look at the current ones. Just remember the good old days and, you know.
Yep. Yep. I like
have
it.
Have a few beers, have some wine, women, and song. And,
there you go.
So.
All right, Jim.
Anyway, so how are y'all doing?
We're good. We're good. I'm glad to have Erica back. She's enjoying raising a child, which is really fun, too, but we're glad she's here.
I guess so. You got to have a lot of confidence to be a parent, you know.
Oh, yes.
Or you fake it until you make it.
There you go.
Well, you know, I mean, not that I'm too negative, but I watch too much Dateline, I think, you know. So anyway, you raise this kid until he's 17, and then some night, in the middle of the night, he walks into your room with a shotgun.
Oh, jeez. I hope not.
That may be, you know.
That's a little, yeah.
There goes your investment, you know.
Well, on that note, Jim, we hope you have a great weekend.
Well, I hope you have some more calls. And
we appreciate it. All right. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue to talk about, you know, questions you should ask a financial advisor. And also, am I ready to retire? So please give us a call at 580-KIDO. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Mutch filling in for Dave Pezzo today. We're talking a little bit about everything, I think. It's a little bit of a more broad topic, but we would love calls. 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Email jstone@petzofinancial.net. So Erica does a lot of our first initial meetings with clients when they come in the office and kind of determines where they fit and who they should talk with. So it's kind of screens calls and how they work. But I think probably the most frequently asked question would be, am I ready to retire?
Definitely. A lot of people come in and they are either close to retiring or thinking about it at least. And that's one of their main questions is, am I ready? Can I actually make this work? Or how do I make this work?
And I believe with COVID, a lot of people have thought about earlier retirement. It seemed before that we'd have people that say, I want to work and do something forever. I don't want to sit home. I don't want to, you know, just completely disconnect. But more people are wanting to retire early. I've had a couple say, you know, I was shooting for 65. I think I want to go at 62.
Mm-hmm. I've even seen the early birds, the 55 years old. And that takes a lot of work to get there, to be able to retire at 55.
Yeah. And the thing you don't think about, and we'll go into a lot of detail on things to put into that plan when you are deciding if you're going to retire. But if you've only worked for 30 years and you retire at 55, your life expectancy is 35, 40 years, and you're going to end up in retirement longer than you worked. So when you think about trying to make that stretch, how long did it take you to accumulate those assets, and how do you now make them last for the next 40 years? So there's a lot that goes into those calculations, but we're going to step on, you know, a few of these and say, you know, what landmines are out there? What could we potentially really cause issues if we do this right or wrong? And the health insurance costs, everything that goes into it. But again, phone calls are the fun part of this. Please call us 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Mutch filling in for Dave today so we can have a well-deserved day off or a week off or a vacation, yeah. Right?
Some time out of the office,
yep,
is
exactly.
Good.
Exactly. Right. Phone number 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Talking about a few different topics today, but we want to get back on track with, am I ready to retire? That's one of the most, I guess, the biggest question we're asked and most frequently asked. So what we want to talk about is some steps to actually get ready for that. So when you come in and sit down and decide this is it, where I'm going to retire, whether you meet with a financial advisor or you're trying to figure it out on your own, maybe you said, once I get all my debts paid off, I'm ready. But then you have to find out, do you have enough in your investments that to generate the income you need? Do you have an emergency fund? Just because you can get by, and I know Erica had a case this week that was like this. They're just there. They have just enough income to meet their expenses, but they don't have a lot of safety net. They don't have a big savings account, but they have enough income so they think they're ready.
Right. It's hard because you lose all flexibility. What if you have an emergency? You don't have enough assets built up, even in a savings account, to pay for a new heater, a new roof, or things like that. And then what if you want to go and do something fun that's out of the norm in your normal budget? Well, if you retire, a lot of people like to have the flexibility to do those things. You have more free time, you want to go and do, and a lot of people have that bucket list, right? Want to check things off and go and play. But if you're just right there, you can't do that. And so then is that what retirement looks like for you? Or do you want to maybe work a year or two longer and just stick it out to have that additional flexibility later on?
And most people at the end of their career are at the point where they're getting the most income from their job. They're used to it. They're comfortable in it. So do you want to work a few more years, or do you want to go back to work and potentially take a job that's not something you enjoy, but you have to have that income? So there's always a give and take. We have clients that want to travel the world and they live on a lot of money every month. That's a different goal. We have others that don't. They just want to sit home. They enjoy their house and gardening and taking care of things. So each person's retirement experience is different than the other, but you don't want to limit that. So when you say, you know, I won't be eating out for lunch, I don't need work clothes, I won't be driving, so I don't need to fuel my car. So you start to check these things off that say, I'll live on less. But then you replace it with, well, I want to travel, I want an RV, I want to do something. And the doing something is much more expensive and variable than your commitment to, I eat this for lunch, I drive this amount of time, I use this much fuel. So don't sit there and think that just because you don't have this part of work-related expenses that you won't have other expenses that come in that offset and are maybe higher than what you're currently experiencing.
Yep. And I would say it's not always the fun expenses that come into play either. I mean, there's medical issues that happen as we get older and things that even if you say, okay, I don't want an RV, I don't want to travel, there's those unexpected expenses that come up too.
Yep. And homes, even if they're paid off, they do need things to keep them going. So if your home's been paid for a long time, but it's not, you haven't replaced your roof, you haven't replaced that air conditioner, the water heater, all these things that come into owning a home, those don't go away when you retire and your house is paid for. A lot of times that's when they start to kick in because the home's slightly older and there's things that need to be fixed and done. So if you don't have a savings account built up and you don't have a cushion for these type of expenses, that doesn't mean they're not going to continue. So how do you pay for those? So then you also look at health insurance. That's a huge one. If you're not ready to go on to Medicare and have that set cost, do you have any idea what it costs to go out on the open market? And if you say, I'm going to use the exchange or I'm going to do something that keeps my costs low, do you even know what those income limits are? And then how does that affect what you are able to spend and use? So there's a lot of these things that people don't always think about. And then there's also the social aspect of working. All of a sudden, you're not, I mean, if you were high up at your work and people came to you and want solutions and questions answered, all of a sudden, no one comes to you. We spoke to a gentleman a few weeks ago, and he said he's on his fourth retirement. He said every time he retires, he gets bored and he feels like he's not enjoying things. So he goes back to work again. Some people do that. Some people don't. But do you want to be forced to? It's different choosing to go back to work because you enjoy it versus being forced. And what are you going to spend your time doing? So there's a lot of the psychology of of retirement that's quite different than just the financial side. So read about it. Get your social network built up. Look for something to do. Retire to something, not just from something.
And kind of jumping back to what you said, if you want to retire and you want to go rock climb and you want to go do all of these physical activities and you're just there, you're just about to make it, then just know that, okay, when I get out of that physical, you know, peak physical ability, that you will have to go back to work. And if you're okay with that, we've seen that work too. Everybody's retirement looks different. You just have to have a full understanding of what's realistic to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it doesn't mean it's right or wrong. We just don't, you don't want to limit yourself and be forced to do something, right? Everything about life should be based on choices, and making sacrifices and scrimping is different than being forced to do something. So do you want to be forced? And like a lady we met with the other day said, I don't want to be a Walmart greeter at 75. And that's a funny joke that people say all the time. But in a lot of ways, what she's saying is, once I decide I'm done working, I don't want to have to go back. Part of it too is make sure you're on the same page with your spouse or your significant other to be sure that they're thinking the same way that you are. If one of you is quite a bit younger than the other, can you take care of the second one as long as you could you? So if you're 62, you only have 3 years, but then your significant other's 55. Think about how many years of health expenses plus what are they going to do for the next 30, 40 years.
Right. And the other side of it, that is too, just to sit down and talk about it before you get there. Because we've also had couples that come in and say, I want to go travel. The other person has traveled for work their whole life. They don't want to travel anymore. Mm-hmm. So just making sure that your goals align. It's kind of funny. You know, you've been married to this person for 40 plus years, and now it's time to kind of do what you guys want to do. Just making sure that you're both on the same page is important too.
Yeah. We tell people sometimes to even go into different rooms and write them down. Not together, don't talk about them, because you can talk yourself into doing what the other person wants to do because you've been together so long and that's just how it goes. But if you sit down and you write them down separately and look and see, wow, I had no idea you wanted to do that, or you had no idea you wanted to do that, and all of a sudden it becomes a different focus, which is fun. Mm-hmm. But if you want that second house in the hills and then you commit to that, those are very expensive things that you may dream about, but then something's got to give somewhere else. So just make a plan for that as well. You can tell we like that word plan.
Yeah.
Don't have surprises. Plan for everything, right? All right, we're going to go to the phones real quick. Terry, how are you?
Well, just doing my due diligence and trying to keep my financial advisor happy.
Well, thanks for calling in, Terry. It's good to hear your voice.
Well, yeah, you kids are going on, and I'm basically, first off, volatility is good. When we have this ups and downs, it gives a an astute financial planner a chance to make outsized gains over time.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The operative thing, over time. I learned a term playing with Bitcoin here is, when in doubt, zoom out. Take a longer term perspective.
Yeah. Yep. No, you're absolutely right. And that's the hard part, though. It's because when the noise is so loud, it's really, really hard to remember the long term.
Yeah, well, that depends on who you listen to. That's why you hire a professional.
It helps. It helps because then you get nervous, you bounce it off of them, and they kind of recenter you and try to keep you on track.
And the volatility is good, too, when you're just getting started or still even just contributing to your 401k with all of those contributions coming in on those dips.
Yeah, you don't have much money, but you have lots of time. That's the thing about it. You have to look at different graphs, I guess, axis of time versus money.
Time is important, definitely.
So yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to call up and make sure that you're all ready to receive the puppy.
I'll have to share that story with Jennifer. I haven't yet.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say another puppy.
I talked to him last night, and the boy is doing well, so let's set this up right.
Good. We can make that happen.
Take care of everything. The next generation, since we're talking about wars and rumors of war.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you, kids, and have a better show than I can ever help you with.
You always help, Terry. We appreciate you very much. Take care.
All right. Good day.
Bye-bye. All right. Yes, calls are the most important thing, like we said. So please feel free to call us at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. But then again, just remember, when you're setting these goals for retirement, be sure to sit down and know what you're saving for. Everybody's retirement's different, so we're not trying to make a statement on what you need or how much, because that's always another question we receive, is how much money do I need to retire with? That goes back to what we're talking about. What does your retirement look like?
Right. It's just like your health, right? Everybody's goal is different. Some people want to gain weight and build muscles. Other people want to lose weight and work out every day. So just making sure that you have your clear path with your goals, and they don't have to be the same as anyone else's. You don't have to spend the same as your neighbor. You don't have to go on the same trips. You don't have to feel like you need to do those things. It's your goal. You work towards what you want to do.
Correct. Yep. And don't compare yourself. Comparison is really the thief of all joy. I know we say that frequently, but it truly is. Just because someone else has decided that they're going to spend their retirement 6 months of the year down south, but you can't afford to do that. Well, do you really want to? Or is it just something you see someone else doing and you're like, I wish I could do that? And they may be looking at you saying, man, I wish I could do what they're doing. So make sure you don't do the comparison game, because it is really about your retirement and how content you are with what you have.
And it's funny, too. A lot of people get to the age 65 or 67 and they love their job and they love what they're doing, but they feel like they should retire just because that's kind of what society pushes, right? Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. funny, people come in, I want to retire. Well, what are you going to do? Do you like your job? You know, all of those questions. Well, I love my job. Well, why stop something that you're enjoying doing just mm-hmm. because you feel like you should?
Yeah. And did you notice that the first thing Erica said was, what are you doing? Do you enjoy this? Not how much money you have, because that's the second part of this question. If you're enjoying what you do, it fulfills you. It makes you happy and you like to go in every day. You like the people you're around. Just because you've gotten to a certain age, that doesn't mean it needs to stop. I mean, we have Dave's dad, Dick Petzo, comes in every single day still that he can. He goes and enjoys himself too, but he still comes to work because he loves it. He doesn't have to. He wants to be around people. He wants to be around his clients. So there's so many different things to look at when you decide what retirement is supposed to be. So it's not an age. It may not even be a dollar amount. It's about who you are and what you want to do. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a few more things on retirement, what to ask a financial planner, and how to really get started on this investing that we love so much. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Mutch filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Before we go back into our topic of retirement and am I ready and what to ask a financial advisor, we're going to go ahead and jump right to the phones. Good morning, Joseph.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm alive and well. Enjoying the weather, too. It's beautiful out there.
Yeah, sun's lovely. We're looking out the window at it right now going, wow, it might actually be a nice day today.
Yeah, me too. Going to catch up on some of the stuff I didn't get done last fall.
Oh, but, boy.
enjoyed your talk about preparing for retirement. I am retired, have been for 17 years now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. One thing my wife and I did is Every month, we went and balanced our checkbook using Quicken, and had categories. How much did we spend for food? How much for clothing? How much for automotive taxes? Maintenance, repair on house. And so over the course of literally a few decades, we have, put this into a spreadsheet. We knew how much we were spending every year. And then with our net worth statement and income statement, a separate statement, we were able to say, okay, will we be able to retire? And it was a backward-looking budget. Mm-hmm. We didn't make a budget so much as we knew what we actually spent after we, balanced our checkbook every time. It took about an hour a month, maybe a little more. But, boy, talk about a good return, so to speak, on our time.
Yes.
Is we were able to retire, and we felt confident, barring an invasion,
Sir, absolutely.
On our shores.
Yes. That's a very, very excellent advice. And, most people don't do that. They don't even realize what they are spending. So our first step is, how can you plan for something if you don't know what it costs you to do it?
And we had a couple decades just looking backwards. We can see trends, how much things were increasing and stuff like that. So if I can offer any advice to your listeners, it's worth, spending an hour a month keeping track of all your expenses. These are actual numbers, not budgets.
Mm-hmm.
And don't tell Dave Ramsey, but we would, take our credit card statements and because those things were also brought in, paid through the checking account, so we could itemize where the money was spent from a credit card point of view as well.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. Like I said, excellent, excellent advice. Most people don't take the time to do that. It gets so easy just to swipe a card and not pay attention. So knowing where that money goes is really, really good advice.
Okay. Well, thank you for your program, and say hi to Dave for us.
Will do. Thank you so much. All right. Yep. Excellent advice that he has. I can't tell you how many times I sit down with someone and I say, how much do you spend? And they'll tell us, I spend X amount every month, but then they have credit card debt and they have no savings, but they have a tremendous amount of excess cash flow. So we're not judging when you go in to talk to a financial advisor. It's kind of like, what did you eat today? Oh, I didn't stop at McDonald's on my way in. It's not a judgment call on what you're doing. It's just being realistic. If you're trying to be fit, you have to eat well. If you go to a dietitian or you go to a doctor and you don't tell them honestly what you eat, they can't help you. Same with a financial advisor. If you don't tell us honestly what you're spending, it's very, very difficult for us to come up with our favorite word, a plan to get you to what you want.
And I think a lot of the times when we meet with someone, if they're closer to retirement, we say, well, then practice what your income would be in retirement. That's a big part of it. If you don't want to track that every dollar that you're spending, which it is a good idea to know where your money's going, but if that's just not how you're going to stick to a plan, just practice it. Put the $5,000 that you're going to spend or have as income in an account and see how far it gets you through the month.
Mm-hmm. And it's also very eye-opening, because if you are using way more than what you think you're spending, maybe that will give you a real reality check of, hey, you know what? I'm not quite there. And it's much easier, like we say, to keep doing what you're doing than to have to restart what you're doing. It's very difficult to start over when you've gotten to a good point. And don't let that age be a factor. There's so much more to every decision that you make than age. All right, we're going to go to an email that I just received. I'm new to investing. I've done some research and feel that Petso might be a good fit. What type of clients do you work with? I'm not in debt, but I don't have a lot. I'll need some education. Do you do that? What should I expect during my first meeting, and how often will we meet after that? Quite a few questions in there. A lot of this Erica deals with on a day-to-day basis, so I'll go ahead and let her run with it. How's that?
Perfect. So when you come in for your first meeting, what you should expect is kind of a lot of just getting to know who you are and what, like we've been talking about, what your goals are. We do ask those personal questions, like Jennifer was just saying. The more honest you are with us, the more realistic we can be about helping you, just like your doctor. So we talk about, do you have debts? Do you know how much you spend? Do you have an estate plan in place? What kind of insurance do you have? And it's not just the investing side of things, which a lot of people think that's what you go to a financial advisor to talk about, is just the investments. That's only a portion of it. It's an important part of it, but there's so much else that goes on in your financial picture to make sure that, yes, you are on the right steps to retiring, or you want to help pay for your kids' college, or whatever that goal might be, because you don't have to meet with a financial advisor just because you want to retire. It could be for another financial goal that you have in mind. So you come in for that first meeting, you meet with that advisor, talk to him about who you are, what you're looking for, and Petso does work with all asset levels. We don't have a minimum. We love helping get people started. So you can come in and tell us your story, get some advice and how to start a Roth. I mean, that Dave's favorite cup of coffee a day, $5 a day. What does that turn into? It's an important story. So no minimums. You come in, you talk about the goals, and then go from there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about our team, and please, you know us, we're not about advertising at all. We just want to explain how the different businesses work. We're very team driven at our office. Everything about it, our clients are part of our team. Everyone that works with us is part of the team, and they're fabulous. We have some younger junior advisors, but that doesn't mean inexperienced. It just means they're getting their feet wet and getting started. We watch over everything they do. They do a fabulous job on all those details. If we decide you need some help on an estate plan, we don't do that through our office. We're not attorneys, we're not accountants, but we have great trusted resources in the community that we can say, hey, you can talk to this one or this one, find that right fit for you. Having been a part of this community forever, 40 years plus for Dave, me 30 plus, we've grown to know a lot. And the people that we work with are absolutely amazing. And the people that are in the community are amazing. So we feel very strongly how we do things. Team approach is important. You call in, anyone will be happy to help you. And it's not about a competition, even though we do compete a lot. Yeah, but that's just fun.
And just to kind of touch on the education part of it, that is so important to us. So, and it should be important to you too, whenever you're meeting with any advisor, not just Petso, coming in and understanding what that person is telling you. So we love to educate our clients because it makes the communication so much more efficient. You should know an overview of why we're doing what we're doing and understanding what a stock is, what a bond is. Those are just the bare bones 101 things, but those are the building blocks to understanding the full financial planning aspect. So education, yes, we love to educate our clients, and it doesn't have to be a new investor. It doesn't have to be someone just starting off, because really, if you're not in this industry, sometimes those words that we throw out, like you said, IPO earlier, I mean, if you're not around it every day, you don't know what it means. It's a foreign language.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we never, ever want someone to walk out of our office and say, wow, they just know so much and just talked over my head. That's not a compliment to us at all. Of course, we want to be sure you understand that we understand what we're doing and that we're not just playing with this. We're very good and we study and we research, but we also should be able to put that across to you in a way that you can understand and walk out the door feeling confident and secure in what you're doing and not go, what did they talk about?
Right. And asking three times if we didn't explain it right, that's on us to make sure that you're understanding the way that you learn too. Mm-hmm.
Erica had a client once that she wasn't really a client. She was more of a first call that mm-hmm. came in. And she said, I went to someone and I've asked him a few times to re-explain himself and I'm just not getting it. Can you try to explain what he's saying? That's not a good thing. That's a bad that person wasn't explaining it well enough to her that she had to find another advisor to help translate the language. So be sure you're comfortable and confident and ask. And people that do this love it and they want you to understand why we're doing what we're doing. So don't hesitate to ever ask. We're going to take our quick break now. And if you have questions, please call us 580-KIDO. Shoot us an email, jstone@petsofinancial.net. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Much filling in for Dave today. Wow, this time goes so quick.
It always does.
It does. You sit there and you think, oh, it's got an hour and a half. How are we going to fill it up with time? And then we start talking and it's done.
We're good at that. We're good at talking. We do that for a living.
Yeah,
I guess. We do.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. All right. So now you made the decision. Today's the day. You're going to call. You're going to meet with a financial advisor. So what questions do you think are important? What should you be asking? And just how do you fill up that first initial meeting to make it valuable for both? We go into a lot of detail that first meeting. A lot of other advisors may do more of a get to know you differently than we do, but we feel it's very important to just really get in on it and really answer everything we can. I think the number one question we ever receive is, are you a fiduciary? I know it's important. It's become the word of the day, I guess, now. But being a certified financial planner since 2006, Dave since the early or at least a mid-80s, we had to agree to do that from the time we got our CFP. There's certain requirements for the CFP board, the Certified Financial Planning, that you have to do to become one. And one of it is you have to be a fiduciary. So in the business world, there's two different ways of doing business. There's suitability and fiduciary. Suitability means if the product meets, it can be classified as suitable. So annuities or things that generate a commission, that meets a suitability requirement. You shouldn't have more than a certain percent of your net worth in a product, all these different things. We're not going to go into details because it gets very weedy. Fiduciary means very simply your interest as the client in front of our interest as your advisor. Easiest way to look at that is we are we get fees only. We don't get kickbacks of any kind from anyone. There's no commission. We actually aren't licensed even on the FINRA side now. We're registered through the SEC. So we can't collect a commission even if we found that it was suitable for you. It's not something that we can do. I think that's important because fees are very transparent. They're debited directly out of your account, normally on a quarterly basis, so you know exactly what that is. Also now, because of the competitive nature of this world, most firms that hold your money, and that's important too, clearing firms hold your money, not the advisor you work with. They don't even charge ticket charges on stocks and exchange traded funds, or the new words, ETFs, which are just baskets of stock as well. They just trade different than mutual funds, priced instantly instead of at the end of the day. And there's some other interesting different differences. But again, I'm trying to stay out of the weeds and just try to cover the basics here. There are no commission charges. And if you happen to see a ticket charge in the fee arena, that goes back to the clearing firm to trade the security. A ticket charge means that's what you get charged to buy or sell a security. Again, you'll see it on all your statements. The only thing that you don't see, so when they talk about all-in cost, is expenses of investment. So built into mutual funds, built into exchange-traded funds, are expenses that get passed to that fund family, to the managers for advertising, for regulation, for sending statements, paper. All of that is wrapped up into that, but it doesn't come to the advisor. So a different way of paying them, but again, fee only on a fee arrangement.
Yep, and that is one of the questions that you should ask is how do you get paid, along with are you a fiduciary? But the payment is important because so many times we have clients or prospective clients come in the office and they say, well, I'm working with another firm, but I don't know how much I'm paying them. And I feel like you wouldn't go to the store and pick out a sweater not knowing what that cost is, right? So that's the same thing. You just want to make sure you understand what your advisor is getting paid and make sure you're receiving value for it. Because there are different ways that advisors do get paid, which you just alluded to a little bit.
Yep. So those are like the first three questions on our list here. We kind of covered in one. Are you a fiduciary? How do you get paid? And what are my all-in costs? Those are three really important questions. I kind of wrapped them all into one, but be sure you know that. Those are very important to differentiate between types of advisors and how they get paid. Also, if you're on a fee arrangement, it does show on your statements. So if they bill out quarterly, look at those quarterly statements and say, how much am I paying? It's a value proposition. It really is. So it's not always going to be when the market's up, you will still pay fees. When the market's down, you'll still pay fees. But if it's a percent, like it always is usually, you're in it together.
And don't ever feel uncomfortable asking that. I mean, that is something that we are very upfront with our fee structure, and any advisor should be able to tell you exactly how they get paid and how much it will be.
Yep, and it should never be a hesitation from them.
Exactly.
Okay. What are qualifications? So there's, again, it goes back to fiduciary, suitability, all those different things, but there's different licenses that are required to do what we do. On top of that, we require anyone that's in the PETSO office to sit for the Certified Financial Planning designation. That usually, on average, takes someone 2 years to get through the coursework. Then there's a study case, which they call the capstone, where you go and you actually do a full plan. You present that, and a final test. So a lot goes into it. It normally takes two and a half years to get through it, but that shows that you're serious. I've taken a lot of licensing exams over my years. Eric has taken a lot of licensing exams. The one that I felt brought the most to the table was that certified financial planner. You go through so many aspects of everything. Plus, you have to have 3,000 hours of experience to even get it. So much goes into it. So look at that. Say, are they certified financial planners? If they have designations behind their name, check to see what those are. There's some designations that you can get with a six-week course, a one-month course, that nothing's bad. I mean, education's education. If people are going in and trying to better themselves, I appreciate that 100%. But if they have five, six, seven designations behind their name, just know what they mean and what it took to get them. And understand that that CFP is hard. It's really hard. So it takes some time and dedication to get through it. Mm-hmm. Let's see. How will my relationship work? That's a big one, too. Do you call me? Do I call you? Do I give you limited discretion, which means you can trade the account on my behalf? That doesn't mean you can send money anywhere or do anything without approval, but you can just buy and sell without having a conversation first. That really is the most efficient way to do things if you are comfortable with the way the money's being managed. People can go in and allocate and do it based on your initial discussions and how you want your money invested for you. That's why it's important to set that initially.
Right. And knowing how often you're going to meet with your advisor is important, too, because we want to make sure everyone's on the same page. If you would like to meet on a quarterly basis or on an annual basis, just knowing what those expectations are so that no one is either overpromised and underdelivered or just your wishes aren't known. Just knowing, okay, I would like to talk to you X amount of times. And is there an additional cost for that? Or how often can I call you? And just knowing the situations, we talk to our clients quite frequently. And knowing when they're getting closer to retirement or do have questions, it might be an every week conversation and then we don't hear from them for 8 months. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But just knowing what your advisor's expectations from you are as well as yours from them.
Yes, because some people like to meet quarterly and talk quarterly. Others say that is way too much because there's not a lot to changes mm-hmm. in between 3 months to the next 3 months. We know how time flies. And if you meet that frequently, sometimes it's a little too much. Second, what is our investment philosophy? That goes back to writing down and telling you and we back and forth, right? What we think is going to happen based on your situation. We can't tell the future. We have no idea what the market's going to do today, tomorrow, the next day. Long term, we know it's the easiest, most difficult way to make money mm-hmm. because if you just leave it alone, it works, but it's very difficult to manage emotions. So that's why we take a lot of time on the high level as well, so that you understand who we are and why we do things the way that we do. But that also comes back to you and how comfortable you are with how your advisor manages money. Not everyone thinks the same. Not everyone is comfortable doing things the way that we do, but we want to make sure you understand that we don't time the market. We don't sit around and say, what's going on today? We think this person's going to be with us 20 years. Should we buy a $5,000 investment today? Well, if they're going to be here 20 years, absolutely. Today is the day you invest. So we don't time the market. We set a goal. And even if someone says, I want to ease in, well, we make an agreement of how long it's going to take for you to get all your money into the market because we don't want to time it.
Right. And adding money is another big question. If you're going to put money in, kind of knowing what the overall plan is, if you have a certain portfolio that's set to achieve that goal, when you add new money, it's not like we're going off that day looking for the hottest stock that's out there, the one that we think is going to do well. We have your plan in place. We know where that money is going to go. So if you do put in another chunk, your plan's already there. It's just going to be spread out like we have your current funds.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We do have time for phone calls, so please give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or email jstone@petsofinancial.net. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone and Erica Mutch filling in for Dave Petso today. Well, he deserves a well-earned day off. He's out enjoying and traveling, and good for him. So back to what we were talking about, questions to ask financial advisors. We do still have time for phone calls, so 580-KIDO, 580-5436. But one of the questions now that's come up a bit more is ESG investing, which is environmental, social, and governance. I know we all want to invest in companies that don't do harmful things to the environment, treat their people good. I understand that. But the funny thing about the world now is a lot of corporations are going that way already. So we did some time and researched some of the funds that we like that we use frequently. And a lot of them had very high ESG ratings, even though they're not mandated as socially responsible. So to us, that feels really good to know that, you know, the world's going that way anyways. You don't have to be selective and potentially limit returns just to feel good about what you're investing in. So I was happy to see that. So we do a little time looking at some of those things. So if that's something that's important to you, we don't let that dictate how we invest because it limits too much. A long time ago, we met with a socially responsible firm. And they actually told us to limit what we asked our clients because they couldn't screen for everything. And we don't want to make people feel good just to feel good. You need to be investing because you want to. And if you really feel passionate about something, donate to those causes. That's the most important thing. They don't know you own the company. It doesn't affect their earnings. So if it's something that you really want to do, donate to them. All right, we're going to jump the phones real quick. Good morning, Dan.
Yeah, I had a question in regards to investing for kids.
Uh-huh.
If a person can do a Roth for them and get them to about $30,000 before 25, would they need to start investing then, or would that be enough for their retirement?
Ooh, that depends. It depends on how much your kiddos want to spend when they retire. I know it keeps going back to that, right? Some of them may be big spenders, mm-hmm. but you know, starting off, getting that money invested early, as we know, if you put away a couple thousand dollars for the first 10 years and stop and then wait 40 more, you'll have more than the person that invests for 30 years. So I hear what you're saying about getting them started early, but that's mm-hmm. a hard one to know if that will be enough.
Okay.
It's a great foundation, and you get them going and you get them started. That's a great thing for them.
And the reason being is I was listening to the other Dave this week, and someone called in and said they're tired of investing and tying money up for 4 years, 40 years or 30 years, and they were at $300,000 at 33. And I was just wondering if you did it for your kids, how long, just as you said, the root cause or root start. Mm-hmm. For them mm-hmm. to begin. So that was my question.
Yeah, yeah. Erica actually ran a quick time value of money calculation while we were talking, and at 8% over 30 years, that would have about $302,000.
About $302,000. And yep. That's a good start for
yep, them. Absolutely. And that's, of course, flat line 8%. You know, we kind of went conservatively. So, yeah, it's a great start for them.
And no additions.
Right. Yep, no additions after what you put in.
All right. Hey, thank you.
You're very welcome. Have a great weekend. All right. That's a very good question, right? Because the most important thing is time. You can't always pick the best investments, but if you get started, you put money away and let that compounding happen. Like Dave always says, that very last double is the most important. If you have $1 million, if you get a double in 10 and you get to 2, those are the important doubles. If you wait 10 years to start, you don't get that last double. Get it going, get it started. That's the most important thing.
Yep. I had a client the other day. She was alluding right to that. She said, I feel like it's already taken me 20 years to get to what I have now, and it's just been inching and inching and inching. But she's now at that point where she's 10 years from retirement, and those last doubles, like you said, make all the difference. So instead of $100 turning to $200, it's $500,000 turning to $1 million. So she was surprised to hear that potentially she might have a certain amount later in life.
Yeah. And it's
because it feels like you just inch along at the beginning.
You do. You do. And those, like you said, those first doubles, but that last one.
Yep.
And then you hear people say, I have no idea how I got here, but all of a sudden I have so much. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It really is. All right. So asset allocation. This is a tricky question. It used to be very simply, you'd look at the book, would always say you have X amount in large cap growth, large cap value. You have X amount in bonds and on and on and on. But what happens when the players change? As Dave talks about all the time, you can't own bonds today. It's impossible when they don't earn anything. So going with that 60-40, just because that's what the books say and that's the allocation that you use, doesn't fit. The allocation should change based on the market conditions. So when we say that we don't let market conditions change how we invest, slightly different. We're not going to let market performance change what we're buying or selling, but allocations change based on market performance and market conditions. You overweight things that may be not doing so well. You underweight things that have done great. And there are times when certain asset classes just cannot be included in your portfolio. You have to play to win this game. You can't play just not to lose. So those conditions do change, and we can't just leave them static. So when you talk with someone, ask them that. Say, are they staying with traditional things of your age minus 100 is what you have in bonds? How do they think? You want someone that thinks outside the box, that doesn't always just stay in this nice little square and never change, and they don't change based on market conditions. You have to look at the game and see what you're going to play at this point. All right. What investment benchmarks do you use? I so wish there was a way to do goal-based comparisons, because if you're going to sit around and compare yourself to a high aggressive growth benchmark and say, why am I not keeping up? But I stated I want income for life. Those are totally different objectives. So if there was a way that you could put it all into it and say, I told my advisor, this is my goal. This is what I'm wanting. How do you hit that goal versus how am I performing against a benchmark? So we like to go in and sit down and say, hey, this is how you told us you wanted to do things. Have we achieved the goal that you've set? And still let your money grow a bit too. We're not saying we're going to go and not have any growth. We're just saying, what is the goal that you've stated and have we met that goal? So benchmarking's different depending on all that.
Right. And it's hard because the S&P and the Dow are numbers that are out there all the time. So people say, well, how is my portfolio doing in comparison to those? But it's not a pure reflection of those. Like you were just saying, goal-based investing is important. But when the S&P is up 28% for the year and your account's not up, that's when you question why, right?
Yep. And if the market's down a lot, why are you down? So it always comes out very loud if you're trying to compare against something. And we get that question frequently. What benchmark should I compare to? Well, you're not going to do as well as a high growth investment just because that's not how you're allocated. Custodian, where's the money held? Big question to ask advisors. No one should hold their money at a local branch office. They should use a big clearing firm. And the big ones are known. There's very few little small custodians around anymore. And if they are, find out who they are. I mean, you've got your TDs, your Schwab, who will be one at some point soon. You've got those big players. So just ask them who they use and who clears their money. If you have a non-qualified account and you want to change it to a new advisor, how much is that going to cost you tax-wise? Do you want them to flip everything? Do you want them to take time and actually look at it and make sure it makes sense not to sell everything in a non-qualified account because you pay tax on the gain just to start over? You do that over and over and over again. If you make changes, it's going to definitely affect your performance. So make sure you know what it's going to cost you fee-wise, tax-wise. Have all the information in front of you before you decide to make a change. And it's okay to ask for references too. Mm-hmm. If you want to really work with someone, you want to know more about them, talk to the people they work with and see if they're a good fit for you and that the touch is enough and it's really hitting what you want. Because high touch sometimes isn't what all advisors do. So make sure that you get some guidance on that. Ask other people that have invested with them. If friends referred you, how did they like that arrangement? Most people would ask, but you know, just check. So again, this is a real brief touch on everything we could think of, that real hour and a half that we could get out there. We're available to talk with you at any time if you want to call us when we're not on the air. We'd welcome that. But in the meantime, we look forward to talking to you the next time Dave's out of town. But for now, have a wonderful rest of your weekend, and we'll see you next time.